part 10 the Agada, the Halel Hagadol. Oisi niflos gedolos levado. Hashem does wonders by himself. Says he was once in a chasen in Yerushalayim. It was the father. He's just married off his 11th child, and he announced. He said to people around him. He says, "I married off 11 children without the help of Hashem." So everybody's like looking at him. What? How can you say such a thing? Without the help of Hashem, married 11 children. Hashem. He says, "Yeah." He says, "What's pshat in help? Help is a person does something and then he gets help." He says, "I didn't do anything. Hashem did it all. I didn't do the help of Hashem. It's all Hashem. Not the help of Hashem." Okay. Says Sirech v'Kochavim l'Mishalos b'Laila the Kilo Amchaslo. So we mentioned before the Chazal that Hashem originally created the sun and the moon, both great, big, and then the moon complained and said, "Well, what do you have? The two kings, same crown, whatever." So Hashem was mimayat the moon, made it smaller. And then after the moon complained or whatever, so Hashem wanted to appease. So the Midrash Rashi brings it down. In order to appease the moon, Hashem gave the moon stars. And that's why we have Yerech v'Kochavim l'Meshos b'Layla. We also have stars at night with the moon in order to appease. So the Chiddush Yerim asks. He said, "I don't understand. So here we have the moon. The moon was so great; it was like the sun. Hashem made it, took it down, right?" So how did he appease? He gave his stars. Well, what does the stars have to do with it? You know, his stars aren't the moon. The stars aren't giving it. The stars are out there, okay, but it's not the moon. What kind of an appeasement is that? It's to put stars. So he says, he answers, what's the idea? Hashem brought out the stars so that the moon will see those are even less than it, smaller than it. Okay? In other words, like we saw also, we mentioned before, the Chazal that when Rabbi Akiva married Rachel and they had nothing and lived in the barn, and then Eliyahu came dressed up as a poor man and he said, "You know, do you have any straw for my wife to give birth? I have nothing." And as we mentioned that then, it was, why did he do that, not just give him money? Because he wanted to show him, teach him a lesson that, you know, you always have to look and see these people have less than you. Right, so that's the appeasement to show I know it works out really and astronomically, but the stars are bigger than the moon. But at least the way we see. Okay. And we said we're saying again, Halal Gadol Legoizer Yamsuf Ligzarim. So the Chazal tell us in Psachim Daf Chuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, it says Kashi Mezonoso Shel Adam Kekriyas Yamsuf. Said that a person's parnasa is as difficult as Kriyas Yamsuf. And we learn it from this kapitel over here. It says in the kapitel Nosan Lechem Nechol Basar that Hashem gives the lechem to everybody, and it says also Ligozir Yamsuf Ligzari, that he parted the sea. So we see from here that parting the sea, parnasa is as hard as parting the sea. So we have to understand what is this difficulty, and how was the connection between parting the Yam Suf and Parnasa. And he said, besides this, however, he says it's difficult because the Midrash says in Bereishis Rabbah that the sea already, when it was made, in the creation of the world, Hashem made the sea and made a condition that it has to part for Klal Yisrael when they get to the Yam Suf. So it was already, you know, set up. So what's this great difficulty? So he says, very nice. He says, the answer is that, yeah, 100%, Hashem made this condition with the sea that has to split for Klal Yisrael, 100%. But what happened? It came time to split. You know, came out of Egypt, came to the Yam Suf, and the Egyptians are, you know, attacking. Oh, now needs to split. So what happens? The sea, yeah, it knew it had this condition, had to split. But it said, we'll split for Klal Yisrael, but where is Klal Yisrael? This isn't Klal Yisrael, right? This is Klal Yisrael. They're the Mem Tes Shari Tuma, right? Like the Malach of the Mitzrim said, you know, the halalu of the Zara, you know, they're the same. What's the difference? What's the difference between these and these? They looked at them like we acted like the Mitzrim. right? So the Hilu the sea was saying, we'll split for we're supposed to split for the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. These are the children of Avraham. This is not them. Right, so until Hashem had to convince to say, yeah, it's them, and it's only because of the Shibu, then to convince them, and it's split. But they didn't recognize us, and they recognize us. Mele, he says, very nice. The same thing with the person's parnasa. What happens? Comes Elul time, and a person has this, reawakening, and he's all into his Torah and his mitzvahs, and then comes, of course, Hashanah and Yom Kippur or whatever. So then, as we know, on Rosh Hashanah, that's when a Chodesh Baruch Hu sets a person's parnasa, how much more parnasa he's going to have that year. So Hashem looks at this guy and says, wow, unbelievable, look at him, such a high level, whatever. And $1 million I'm going to give him this year. Look at him, he deserves it. Look, $1 million, fine. So, then what happens after Yom Kippur? We all know what happens after Yom Kippur. And then, what happens? So Hashem then sends a Malach and says, okay, here, see this guy? See this picture? Okay, give him $1 million. So the Malach comes, gives him $1 million, and the guy $1 million, and he comes back to Hashem. He says, I can't find him. He says, what do you mean? I saw this guy, but you told me to give, but it's not the same as the picture. There's a guy, Torah, Tefillah, this isn't the same guy. I'd love to give him, but it's not the same guy. So Mele, he said, that's the comparison to Yamsu. It's like this, like the Yam didn't want to split because he didn't recognize us. So too, Parnassus is the same way. It's hard to Parnassus because it really is coming to us if we would only stay and be like we were during Rosh Hashanah when his nigs are there, how much we should get. But the Malach can't recognize us. We're different people after that. We don't act the way we used to. So he can't give us. It says, Lamakim Malachim Dolim, V'yarag Malachim Adirim, and says that the also in the Halal, V'nasan Arsalm Nachala, Nachal Yisrael Avdo. So the Chida touches up one of these two things, that Nasan Arsalm Nachala refers to who's their land that we got as a Nachala, Ammon and Moab. Right? Because Ammon and Moab we were not allowed to attack. So Hashem, in order to that we should be able to conquer them, we are not allowed to attack them. So what did he do? He gave it to Sichon and Og. It was not to Sichon and Og, and once belonged to Sichon and Og. Now we can attack them because the Avon Amor we're not allowed to. But now they didn't belong to Avon Amor, and now they belong to Sichon and Og, and therefore we conquered Sichon and Og. So and therefore that then it became a Nachal Yisrael Amo. So we see from here he brings out this concept of being used, so to speak, right? Being a pawn in the hand of the king and being used. Because here, can you imagine, here is Sichon and Og. They conquered Ammon and Moab. He says, we conquered them. They're ours. Wow, they're all proud. They're all happy, whatever. Meanwhile, they're just being used. Right? It's being used so that we can get it, and we can conquer Ammon and Moab. We couldn't as long as they're by themselves. They had to be first taken over by Sichon and Og. So here, Sichon and Og conquered. They thought, "Wow, great! Look, they just did it for us. It was all for us." So they were just being used. So you say we see this idea that Gemara tells us in the Avodah Zarah, Daf Mem Amud Beis, the story with Rebbe Yekod. Rebbe had a bad stomach ailment. And he heard that the cure would be if he drank it's like apple wine, yain tapuchim. Okay, it's like fermented apples, whatever, liqueur, I guess, whatever. So there was a shaila Rebbe had though. Are you allowed to buy this from? He wanted to get some. He wanted to know if he can buy from the goy, or are we choshes that the goy maybe had put in regular wine in it? It's yain nesach. He had a shaila. So the Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, it was made that it's that you can buy from there, fine. So then they went out to look for some this apple stuff for a Rebbe for his ailment, and they found it by a goy that had 300 barrels of this apple wine that was 70 years old. It was aged for 70 years, and they got some for a Rebbe, a few cups, and he was cured. And he made a comment, Baruch HaMachom Shemasar Olam Olashomrim. He says he thanked Hashem that he gave this world to Shomrim. Shomrim guards, meaning, like we said, that how people, you are being used, for the sake of others, for Klal Yisrael, specific. Why? He says, can you imagine what went on over here? He says, this was Apple stuff, okay, that 70 years ago, some guy decided to fill up 300 barrels of this, of apple juice, okay, and with a tremendous amount, and not use it, right, to put it away, to ferment, right, but I'll use it. He had all his own, but he didn't use it. So he had it for a number of years. And then when on his deathbed, you know, he probably told his kid, you know, in the basement is 300 barrels, but don't use it. I want to ferment it for 70 years. So the kid would have liked to use it, whatever. It's worth a lot of money. But no, yeah, father said. He also had it for a while. And then he gave it over to his kid. Again, don't touch it. 70 years, it has to be there. All these barrels, even, oh, come on, I need the money. I want to sell. No, 70 years. So finally, after 7 years, came die. What Rebbe then was all, get able to get a few 300 barrels of this stuff was all so that Rebbe could have like 3 cups of it for his ailment. So they were all shomer for Rebbe, so he could have so he can cure his stomach. Okay. That's the Baruch the Hamakom Shemaser Olam LaShomri. So. He says also along these lines, a famous mashal. There was once in Lita, the price of gold was very cheap. That it was in next door in Poland. Okay, it was much more expensive in Poland. So what people used to do is they want to take the gold and go across the border, sneak it across the border. Obviously, if they pay tax, it's not going to be worth it. But sneak across the border, sell it over there in Poland, make a lot of money. So there was one such guy, he filled up a suitcase with these gold bars, it was weighed a ton, and he's schlepping the suitcase, and of course he can't just go straight, yeah, he has to sneak it in, so he goes through the forest, trying to sneak into the nearby Polish town on the other side of the border. So he's schlepping this heavy suitcase, you know, huffing and puffing in the forest, you know, trying, and all of a sudden he hears something, he goes, uh-oh, he hears like this horse, whatever, turns around, there's a policeman. He goes, oh no. So the policeman says, hey, where do you think you're going? He says, I'm going to this Polish town over here. I have relatives there. I'm visiting. Yeah. He goes, oh, you're visiting relatives. Uh-huh, okay, fine. He says, and what's in that suitcase of yours? And he goes, clothes. It's clothing, I think. It's clothing. He says, uh-huh. He says, tell me something. If you're going to visit, why are you going through the forest? He goes, because it's nice, peaceful here, birds chirping, you know, it's a nice, let's go. He goes, okay, fine. So he lets him go, and he's like schlepping the suitcase, trying to make it kilu, it's light, you know, and it weighs like 100 pounds, you know, he's like, you know, he's pretending, and he's schlepping, he's schwitzing, and he's going, and the police is walking next to him. Finally, just before he gets to the border, and he's like, okay, good, here I am, you know, about to close. The police was like, stop for a second, he's open that suitcase. So he opens it up and he sees all the gold. And he says, you're under arrest, whatever. So the yid turns to the policeman and says, you're disgusting. I'm just disgusting. So the policeman says, excuse me, I'm disgusting. You're stealing and, you know, taking these things across the border, you know, to steal, you don't have to pay your taxes, and I'm disgusting? He says, yeah, you're disgusting. He goes, why? He says, if you're coaching me, you just said that I was, you know, stealing the, you know, going across the border, you know, trying to. He says, so why didn't you tell me to open my suitcase way back there? Why did you have me schlep the thing all the way there and now ask me to open it? You know, I had to schlep the whole this heavy thing. If you were coaching me back there, why didn't you ask me to open it? So he says, excuse me, he says, am I your moving company? You know, I have to schlep it. I'm your schlepper. Well, why should I schlep it? You schlep it. So he said, that's the idea, that nimshal, that some people are schleppers for others. We see the pasuk says that Rasha yachin v'tzadik yilbash, says Niyu. That the Rasha prepares, and it's all for the tzadik, so the tzadik can have it later. We find that by Haman and Mordechai, that Haman built this huge castle, just so Mordechai can take it over. He put all the hard work in, but it was like a shomer. He was just being used so that it can one day go to Mordechai. So we see this also the Gemara says in Baba Basra Yud Aleph Amud Aleph that the Maisa with Munbaz HaMelech that there was a Shnut Batzorat, there was a famine, and he had tremendous wealth, the storehouses of wealth that his forefathers had, you know, left at him, and he gave it away to the poor people so they should have what to eat. So his family says, what are you doing? You know, your forefathers, you know, put away all this money and you're just giving it away just like that. So he said, he told them, he said, listen, he says, they put away their riches, you know, but for who? For others. You know, they didn't get anything out of it, they saved for others. Whereas I'm using it for myself. He means when I give out a staka, so I get this kosan olamaba. What do they get from it? Nothing. They gave save it. They have nothing from it. I at least give it to staka, so I'll have it for the next world. He says, Maisi says, I remember when I was in Siberia, we were sitting in the a number of prisoners together, and amongst us were a couple of brothers. There's two brothers, they were very wealthy, till everything was taken from them. They were the brothers Punsky from Kovna. And the Russians came, whatever, and took everything, the communists, and they sent them to Siberia, and here they were with him. So he said, Mamish Lokeo Mishalim, you know, they were here, they were punished, and they were taken, all their stuff was taken from them, they had nothing. Anyway, so they were sitting once and schmoozing, and these one of the brothers, the Punsky brother, turns to them and says, you know what? I'll never forgive the Kovner Rav and the Ponovich Rav. I'll never forgive them. I'll never be soleach them. So he asks, he says, excuse me, what did they do? What are you blaming them for? The Ponovich Rav, the Kovner Rav, what did they do? What do you mean you're not going to forgive them? He says, I'll tell you why. He says, why, when they came to me to ask me for a donation, he says, why didn't they put a gun on my head? Why didn't they come and make me give all my money to them? Why didn't they do that? Instead, what happened? They didn't. I gave them a little bit, whatever. And in the end, now, the communists took it. So here, I have nothing. The communists took it. I have no money, and here we are, I'm a prisoner. I would have given them all of my money, at least I would have had a tremendous source in Olam Haba. Give all this money to Torah, I would have had a tremendous source. Now, I lost my money anyway, but I lost it to the communists. Nothing. What I get out of it all. So he says, so here you have all, you know, my forefathers saved their money. Yeah, what do they have? They saved it all for Stalin, that he could have it. Instead of, if they would have given it away to Stalin or whatever, they would have given it away then. They would have been a shomer for Stalin. They could have been a shomer, you know, for themselves and then given it to Stalin and have an olam haba. Okay. Also the same, he says, Lechura, why the double lashon? Nasan artzum nachala, nachal Israel. Just say nasan artzum nachala Israel. Avdo. Why does he have to say the word nachala twice? So he says that he remembers in the year 1947, before the Kuma Medina, there was a meeting with the United Nations, and the representative of the Histadrut he was there, and he was asked by the head of the meeting, you know, he says, why you Jews want Eretz Yisrael? What shaykhus do you have? You're from Poland, from Russia. What shaykhus do you have to Eretz Yisrael? Well, so the representative of the Histadrut, he picked up a Tanakh, and he says, this is the shaykhus we have. You know, then says, look what it says. He opens up. It says, "Lizaracha natati at the aretz hazos." Right? Eretz Yisrael is ours. Lizaracha, the Hashem said, "I'm giving it to." So the representative of Syria, Ahmed Shukeri, he gets up and he says, "Excuse me, our." He called the representative, the Jewish representative, he called them our guests from Tel Aviv. He says, our guest from Tel Aviv over here says that the land is there because he's opening up the Chumash, and it says that, you know, Hashem gave the land to the, you know, to Jewish people. He says, yes. He says, but it also says in the same book over here that Mechalaleha mos yumas, that whoever is Mechal Shabbos deserves to die. And there's all kinds of these Jews driving around on Shabbos in Tel Aviv. So, well, you're bringing me a riot from this book, their book, says Tati, give the yara the arets. It also says you're not about to mechal Shabbos either in this book. So, what kind of a riot? It says Mele, that's the pshat over here in the pasuk. Natati arsul nachalal. Yeah, when do we deserve to attribute inheritance to us here at Israel? Dafka is a nachal Israel avdoi. When they act like the avdei Hashem, then fine, then it's a Nachalei Yisrael Avdoim. But if they actually Yom David not, then we don't have any claim to it. Okay, we go on to Nishmas. Says it brings under the heading of Somech Noflim Zokev Kufim. Says that brings a mashal. He says, imagine in the, he says in America, it's a place called Fort Knox. Right there, they have it's a storage place for all the gold of America stored in Fort Knox. Says you know, tons of millions of these gold bars are ready to store there. And of course, the place is very well protected. All right, say, but nobody's like, in, you know, there with the gold. It's just, you know, all protected from the outside. He says, however, there is one that is there with the gold. Who's that? It's a mouse. Mouse, you know, breeded, got, you know, went through and got in there. And the mouse is made its home there on the gold bars lying there. That made its home there, goes to the kitchen where sometimes the shomrim gets some food, goes back, you know. So, says, but it's interesting because they have, you know, these lists, he says, of the 10 wealthiest people in the world. So this mouse is not on the list. So why not? I mean, the Fort Knox, all the gold, there's nobody that's in it. His mouse is by himself on all the gold. So how come he's not on the list of one of the 10 wealthiest people in the world? So the answer is, because he doesn't get anything out of it. He's sitting there, but what is he can't use it. It's meaningless to him. It's meaningless to him. It's on no gear. So, in fact, the Gemara uses that term, somebody that has like a miser. Someone who's a miser. In other words, he has money, but what's meaningless, he doesn't use it. Doesn't, so Gemara calls that a achbara de shachi vadinre. It's a Gemara Sanhedrin, kaftet. That's what the Gemara calls it. It's a mouse that is lying on money. He's a miser. It's like a mouse. He doesn't have any use for it. He doesn't use the money. What good is it? So he says, but the truth of the matter is, we ourselves are also worthy of being called that. That we don't make use of our wealth. He says, what's pshat? He says, I'll tell you. He says, once I was, a number of years ago, I was sick, lo aleichem, and I was in a hospital in Bellinson. And one day I get a visitor. Who comes to visit me? Rav Aaron Leib Scheinman comes to visit Bikur Cholim, to visit me. So he comes into the room, whatever, and I get up, you know, I want to make sure I have my robe on, you know, and that. So I greet him, fine. So he turns to me and he says, you have no idea how rich you are. Here, Varnley tells me, he says, you have no idea how rich you are. So I thought to myself, you know, I'm rich. He said, I'm rich. He said, fine, I'll give you a power of attorney and you can marry off my grandchildren. You know, he said, rich, what rich? So Rav Aaron Leib said to him, let me explain. He says, I was just, before I came here and to you, visit you, I was on the 8th floor. That's where the people have only the machala. And one of the people there is a very wealthy Machzikei Torah. He gives a lot of money to yeshivas, whatever. And Nebuch is very ill, and he's confined to his bed, whatever. And so I went to visit him. So he turned to me and he said, Rav, he says, it's, you know, I have no idea what I'm going through. He says, I'd be willing to give half of my wealth to be able to just get out of this bed. I'd be able to get out of this bed. I'd be willing to give half my wealth. He says, this guy's a wealthy, very wealthy man. Let's say, I don't know, $100 million he has, okay? So he's willing to give $50 million just to be able to get out of bed. But he can't, right? So therefore, I said, Rav Aaron Leib, look, you're out of your bed. You're walking around or whatever. So what's pshat? So you have $50 million. Right, it's worth $50 million. You say to get $50 million to be able to walk around. You're walking around. You have $50 million. You're a very wealthy man. So he says that, what's pshat? In other words, so, Baruch Hashem, you know, we're healthy, whatever, so we're rich. But what? We're like this mouse. It's a witch, but we don't use it. Right? We're healthy, so do something. You can learn. You can Torah, mitzvah. You're healthy. You can, you know, but you don't take advantage of it. So you're like the achbara, the shachi medinri, like this mouse that sleeps on the money. You're as if you don't have anything because you're not using it. So use it. Use your health while you have it. says, brings a maisa on the heading is L'chala Varcha Nachnu Modi, that Rabbi Yechiel Michal Feinstein, who's nephew of Moshe Feinstein, and his daughter was sick. She had asthma. She was sick with asthma, and she had a pretty bad case. So they always had to make sure that they had like a machine, like an oxygen machine. So anytime she had an attack, you know, they can quickly, you know, give her oxygen or whatever. So they had more than one machine, you know, around, just one here, one there, just in case wherever she would have an attack, they always be prepared. Okay. So what happened? One day she had an attack, and they couldn't find the machine. They're looking, where is it? Where? And Nebuch, she choked and she died. So afterwards, they saw that right by her bed were three machines, right there. So they were like kicking themselves. It was right there. It was right by. Why didn't we see it? Why didn't we know? It was right there by her bed, the three machines. They're kicking themselves. But okay, what can you do? It's too late. So he said at the shiva, Rabbi Yaakov said he came to the shiva, you know, to Menachem Avoh. So he said, let me share with you something I heard from the Gona Tzadik, Rabbi Moshe Rosenstein. He was the Mashkiach of Lomja. Right? He said that, you know, on the one hand, we say, and the animaimin, the animaimin b'munah shleima, shabori sprach shemo asa osev yaisa lachol amasi. Everything Hashem does, right? Everything's Hashem. Hashem does everything. He did, does, will do. He does everything. And on the other hand, we are told to do ishtadlus, right? To do things, even though lamaisa was pshat that not that they really does anything. Hashem does everything, but we just have to go about as if we are doing something. Go about the actions. So he says, Moshe Rosenstein said, that that's only with regards to the future. In other words, what's going to be, Hashem's going to do, but I got to just do something, kiilu, right? But Hashem's really doing it. That's as far as the future, what I should do now. I have to do something. But when it comes to the past, you're not allowed to say, oh, if I had only done, if had I done, because the Maisa, everything is Hashem. Even the future is, but then, future-wise, we're supposed to act. But what happened in the past, and we're not supposed to act, and it has nothing to do with the past. That's only a shame. So if a person says, oh, why didn't I do this, why didn't I that? He says, that's kfira. That's kfira. If you say, why didn't I should have done. So maybe he was hinting to them, that, you know, why are you kicking yourself? Well, why didn't we find the machine? The machine was there. That's, you don't have to say those things. Right? Now, what was is what, that's, everything's a sham. Even the future is a sham. Okay, just the future, we have an order to just go about to do something, ki'ilu or do something, but not when it comes to the past. Past is with Nesor Shus. So he says afterwards, he says, I bumped into Rabbi Yeshua Shklar, whatever. He says, he told me that I was by also to Menachem, Rabbi Michal, and he said, of all the people that came, he says, you're the only one that is really Menachem. So then he says, so I said, I was? He said, I wasn't. It was Moshe Rosenstein. He was Menachem, not me. I was saying over what I heard from Moshe Rosenstein. Okay. We say in the Nishmas, V'yadenu prusos ke nishrei shamai. So there's a nice little word here about the nesher, right? We say in Pirkei Avos, havikal ke nesher. So it means a nice word. He says that if you look at things, the insects, particularly that have wings, like a fly, a mosquito, right, little birds or whatever, they have wings, and that's how they can fly. They fly nice. He says, yet you see others that have wings and they can't fly. You have big chickens, turkeys, ostrich, right? He actually says that. Ostrich, right? They have wings, but they don't fly around. Why don't they fly around? Because they're too big. They're too heavy and they can't fly. You know, right? They're little things, they're flittles, they can fly around. He says, the exception to that is the eagle. An eagle's not a little tiny birdie, it's a big, big thing. And yet it can fly. Why? Because it puts in tremendous amount of effort and really strong wings, and it can fly, even though it's very big. And so Mele, that's what we were told. We should be kal kanesher, we should be light like an eagle, meaning that even though we by nature are heavy, you know, it's hard, but we have to overcome that. That's like the eagle. It's heavy, but it can fly anyways because it puts in the effort. So too, if we're heavy by nature, but we have to put in the effort, not be lazy, and fly. And he says here that, you know, yeah, we're heavy, but unfortunately it depends what, you know, we're going on a tefillah tomorrow. Oh, good, get up at 5 o'clock and that, whatever. For that we're not heavy. When it comes to getting up to daven to learn, then we're heavy. Brings the joke that, it's an old joke, that about the yid that he says that, you know, there's on one hand it says Shabbos is Rosh Tevis, right? Shena b'Shabbos Tanu. And it's you're supposed to sleep on Shabbos, Shena b'Tanu, right? But Mitzat Sheni, it says that the Shabbos was given to learn Torah. So Shena can also be read as Lashon V'Shinan Tam Levenecha, to learn. That Shena, learning on Shabbos, is a Tanu. So what is it? Is it sleeping? Is it Tanu? Or is it learning? So he says, so some people, what do? To be Yotzi Boshita, to take a Gemara on Shabbos, and they fall asleep. No. So they get both, you know, sleep. Okay. Says that heading is Ein Anachnu Maspikim Lahodos. So he says the Yisod, the basis and the foundation of giving thanks is to realize that nothing is coming to me, right? That everything I have is chesed, I have to be thankful, whatever, then you can thank, right? If you think it's coming to me, what do I have to thank for? Magiali, as it says, it's coming to me. So in order to thank, a person has to be realize that nothing's coming to him. Whatever you get, mashabaz, we say baruch haba. Whatever comes, be thankful, because nothing's coming. If you have that attitude, then that such a person could be makir tov. And he brings the Mishnah at the end of Titus, which we brought before. He's bringing different types here. It says that there are no greater yamim tovim than Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur, where the girls were dancing in borrowed clothing, it says, and the bachram would come out, the single bachram, choose their mate. So he said, somebody once asked me, he says, how could it be? How can you choose a shidduch in 1 second? You know, look around, okay, her, boom. How can you find a shidduch so quickly? You know, just like that. So he says, the answer is, what the Mishnah says, that the girls were dancing around with borrowed clothing. Right? In other words, they say they were, as if they're saying that I don't have anything of mine, nothing's coming to me, even my dress is not mine. Borrowed. I'm not. If a person has that attitude, you can, no problem, can make a shidduch just like that. And where is the problem? Everybody thinks, oh, what is coming to me? What I want? No, you can't give me what I want. I need this and I need that. And everybody wants and needs and wants the other to give. You can't make a shidduch like that, and you can't build a marriage like that. He said, Hayasod hi hanava vakarasatov hema basis l'chay nisuin muvsharim. The basis for a happy marriage is humility, hakar satov, like nothing's coming to me. It's if you, that's how you feel. So you just give to the other and say, no, I don't deserve anything. But that's it. The problem is everybody wants this, feels that, oh, what can that person give me? And then they don't give it to them, and then ends up in tragedy. Okay. It says, Mechaleim Rayim Benemanim Dilisanu. So he says, I was once at a party with Dr. Moshe Rothschild. He was the founder of Mayanei Yeshua, the hospital in Bnei Brak. And he said, I mentioned, I was speaking there a little bit at the party. He says, and I mentioned the Chazal that says that Shmuel made a comment, the Amora Shmuel made a comment, and he said, Nehiringli Shvile Derekia Kishvile Denaharda. He says he was at such a high level. He said that the paths in Shemayim in the Rekia, I know them so well, just like the paths of my city Neharda, where I live. Okay, so Yanka says, I don't understand. I mean, I could say, he says the same thing, that I know the Shvili Rekia like I know Bnei Brak. Why? Because I don't know Bnei Brak. I don't know those streets of Meir. Meaning, so what does Shmuel know? Shmuel knew all the streets in Neharda. Well, Bistami knew from his house in the Beis Medrash. And he goes mitayli going around the whole city. Well, how does he know the? He says, I know the Shvili Rekia like Shvili of Neharda. That's my. How does he know this? Bistami knows how to get to the Beis Medrash. So he says, I suggested two answers, and Dr. Rothschild added a third. Said one answer I want to say, he says, is that he was Rosh Hashiva. So Rosh Hashiva has to go knocking on doors to make money for the Yeshiva. So he went around the town. He knew the town guns fine. He had to go knocking on doors all along. One answer. Second answer, he says, is he was a dayan mumcha l'dinei mamonos. So Mele, people kept calling him and said, oh, this guy built his extension and it's bothering me and I can't see it. So he had to go around and see all these building things and see who got the permits, didn't get the permits, why. So he got his ways way around. Those are the two answers he gave. I was thinking my own answer, that the rabbi has to go around to see, check the Eruv, make sure the Eruv, so he has to go around the whole city, make sure everything, all the Eruv. I won't answer. Anyway, so he says here, from Dr. Rothschild says, I'll have a different answer. He said, the Gemara says, Bamatziam Pehei, that Shmuel was a doctor. Right? So the doctor, he's got to know, got to learn the map, right? Someone calls, emergency, so and so, right? So like the Hatsala, in those days, he didn't have GPS. So you got to know the city. The doctor, you got to call, somebody's sick, you got to know how to get there. Since he was a doctor, yeah, that's how he had to know the city. Right. Well, we have arrived at Nirtza. Okay. It brings here, it says a known story, but I never heard it before, that there was a gvir, it's going on the piyut that we say, v'chein v'hi b'chatzi alayla. So one part we say Yasar Yisrael Malach v'yuchal lo laila, that the Malach fought with Yaakov, right? Malach Sar Sheisa. Anyway, so he says that once a wealthy man came to Tzanz and they went to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, "Where are you from?" So he says, "I'm from Lemberg." So he says, "Oh, you're from Lemberg? So nu. So did the Malamed get the Nadunya?" So the rich man says, "Excuse me? What are you talking about?" He says, the Malamed from Lemberg, did he get the Nadunya?" He says, "Well, I don't always understand. What's the Rabbi, what are you talking about? Nadunya, Malamed." He says, "Well, about a month ago, there was a Malamed from Lemberg. He came here, and he was crying to me that he marrying off his daughter, and he was mechayev himself in a dunya, and he didn't have the money, or whatever. So I just want to know what happened to him. Did he get the money together?" He goes, "How am I supposed to know? I don't know." He says, "Do you know this Malamed?" He goes, "Yeah, of course I know. He's a famous Malamed, but I don't know, So he says, "So why don't I don't understand? If I know," he says, "how come I'm from Tzanz, you're from Malember, how can you not?" He says, "So you're Rebbe, So I find out these things, whatever. But I don't butt into people's business, He has to have money. I don't know. I'm a busy man. I work all day, in my factories, whatever. And then afterwards, I come home, I go straight to the base medrash and learn, You have to learn also. So I don't have time to look into people's things." So he says, "Oh, okay, so if you're a learned man, let me ask you a question in Rashi." He says, "Okay." He says, "On the one hand, it says that when the Malach was fighting with Esav, it says in the pasuk, 'V'yeyavek ish imo ad olas ha'shachar,' that the man, the ish, was fighting with them until the morning." So Rashi says, "Who is this ish?" It says, "Saro shel Esav," was Esav's sar. Yet, when Yosef was going looking for his brothers, it says over there also, "Vimtzeu ish v'nei toeh basadeh," a man found him because he was lost. Yosef was lost, and the man found him. Ish. Okay, Rashi says, and who is this ish? Gavriel Amalach. So he says, it says ish here. How did Rashi know that over there was Saul Shel Esav and over here was Malach Gavriel? It's the same ish in both places. How did Rashi know? So the guy's, I don't know, good question. So the Rebbe answered him, he said, "I'll tell you. It's very simple. Okay, this Malach was sent to fight with Yaakov and he did his job. Okay? But then when Yaakov said, 'Give me a bracha,' what did he answer him?" He said, "No, shalcheini shegiyas mani l'marshah. I can't. I have to go to say shira." He says, "That's the Malach shel Esav, right? You have to say shira. The guy wants something for him. Wants a little bit of help. Give me a bracha." "No, I have to say shira to Chodesh Baruch Hu. A yid needs your help, and you just ignore him. You go doing your shira to Chodesh Baruch Hu. That's the sara besa." Says the other ish, though, "What are you? Yosef was lost. He came to Yosef. Can I help you?" you lost your way. We can say, Ehu Ish, the person found Yosef. Yosef didn't go out. He came to him. He says, oh, I see you're lost. Can I help you out? Because that's Malach Gavriel. So he's hinting to him, same thing. Oh, you're busy with your there. I mean, take a look at help your fellow Yid. You don't help, that's... And he says that, he says, you see, a guy comes on Yom Kippur, every Yisrael Salandri, you say, a guy comes in Yom Kippur to davening, and he's dressed in his kittel, and his talis, whatever, and he comes to Kol Nidra, and he says, hey, there's a guy sitting in my seat, and stomping, pushing everybody aside, he says, hey, you're in my seat, pushes him out, and he says, and then he's davening, and crying, and whatever, he says, the guy's a malach, malach, malach. He says, Yisrael Santu, you should say, he's a malach. He's a malach habala. He's a malach. He's a malach habala. So he said, that's called a malach. Okay. Seder.